radio is an act of resistance. Radio is an act of the imagination. Radio is an act of communication. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick.
Tapi betapa dapat kumbang bersanding dengan rembulan. Besar hasrat hatiku ingin memeluk gunung. Apa daya tangan tak sampai hati risau termenung.
Kita kasih kurban, kita bantu kowe
Cool and strange music from the ethers. Those are some 78s that were released in Indonesia back in the 1940s and 50s. I'm not even going to attempt to read them because I would need a course in pronunciation. Needless to say, you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London. And on your smartphone, computer, tablet, and gold fillings at classicalwscs.org. Coming up in a few moments, I'm going to have a shortwave primer by David Gorin to assist you with shortwave listening and the joys of tuning in the high frequencies. But before that, we're going to hear some music by the Sunbirds, a tune called African Sun.
Thank you. Thank you. Is it live or is it Edison? You're on the Soundbeat. The opera house lights dim, the capacity crowd hushes, then a voice. Yes, there it is. A high, bright soprano fills the air. But the real fun starts when the singing stops. You see, the year is 1919, and the crowd is taking part in an Edison tone test. Before the lights come back up, they're prompted to guess if what they heard was live or a diamond disc. Wax cylinders provided mankind the ability to reproduce sound. By 1912, though, Edison had clarity in mind when he developed the diamond disc. Grudgingly. Competitors had started producing flat records over a decade earlier, but Edison wasn't convinced. He produced both until 1929. In fact, many of the cylinders produced during this time, like this one, were dubs from diamond discs. That's a whole different level of stubborn. You've been listening to Love's Old Sweet Song, recorded by Marie Rapold in 1919. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
And you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick, cruising up and down the dusty aisles of music from the past century of recorded sound. We're going to have a mini documentary now by Dan Gorin on the joys of shortwave listening.
Here's a quick shortwave radio primer so you can tune along at home. First, get a good reference book like the World Radio TV Handbook or Passport to World Band Radio. They've got station schedules and a radio buying guide. Expect to spend at least $100 for a shortwave-worthy receiver. A digital frequency readout is a must. That old analog shortwave radio you found in the attic will work, but the ability to know exactly where you're tuned will make it a lot easier to find stations. The main thing about shortwave radio is its reach. A mere twist of the dial or punch of the button can take you from China to Africa. Between 3 and 30 megahertz, there are 14 shortwave bands, often referred to in meters. They're packed with international and domestic broadcasters. To find stations, check above 11 megahertz during the day and below 16 megahertz at night. It's also a good idea just to tune around and explore. Shortwave reception conditions are constantly changing. During the day, the 19-meter band is a good place to hang out. Start at the top of the band at 15695 kHz and slowly drift down the dial. Several high-powered African and Middle Eastern domestic stations can be easily heard in Eastern North America and beyond. Africa number 1 broadcast from Gabon on 15475 kHz, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, when it's early evening in West Africa. Then move down to 15345 kHz. For a few moments, feel at one with the cab drivers in Tangier, Morocco, who are also listening to RTV Marocain. Then keep going all the way down to the bottom of the band to 15,000 kHz and synchronize your watches with the rest of the world.
At the tone, 0 hours, 0 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time. National Institute of Standards and Technology Time, this is radio station WWB, Fort Collins, Colorado, broadcasting on internationally allocated standards.
When it's 0 hours UTC, it's 8 p.m. in New York City. The lower bands become usable, and loud signals boom in on 31 and 49 meters.
From studios in Hilversum, Holland, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands, broadcasting on shortwave and satellite.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba,
broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
These are the external services, the official voice of a nation. They want to persuade you, insult you, entertain you, or at least get you to come to their country and spend some money.
For those interested in an ecological vacation, the Aguas Claras International Villa, located in the westernmost province of Piñon del Río, is one of the best nature destinations on the island. Radio Havana, Cuba's Damian Rafael reports.
Who listens to this stuff? In the U.S., it's a melange of expatriates, iconoclasts, and news junkies.
This is London.
In other parts of the world, shortwave can be the only way to get outside news. When former Russian Premier Mikhail Gorbachev was under house arrest, he had to tune to the BBC World Service to find out what was going on in his own country.
The North American service of Radio Moscow, operating in the 19, 25, and 31 meter bands.
In the 1970s, when I first listened to shortwave stations like Radio Moscow, I heard a radically different point of view than I was getting from the U.S. media.
The capitalist economy of the United States will never again be able to attain new heights. It is now on the verge of decline.
Time and again, the Soviet Union has given convincing proof that it is ready to light not only a small candle, but a big bonfire of friendship and mutual understanding.
I was fascinated by this kind of rhetoric. Soon I could talk about crushing imperialism better than anyone else in my junior high.
The Soviet Union is already producing more coal, iron, manganese, chromium ore, nickel, peat, locomotives, freight cars, grain combines.
A little of this goes a long way. A second opinion is just down the dial.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
The Voice of America has been on the air since the early days of World War II. They broadcast in 53 languages, including something that sounds like an old comedy sketch, The Slow Talkers of America.
Special English on the Voice of America. I'm Richard Rail, reporting from Washington. Russia has accepted help from Britain and Norway in its efforts to rescue 118 sailors from the nuclear submarine Kursk on the bottom of the Barents Sea.
After an evening of news and opinion, tune down to the refuge of the tropical bands. Here on 60 and 90 meters, the stations are almost all broadcasting to local audiences in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. The programs are basic, mostly music and light chat. In remote areas of Peru, the shortwave scene is unusually active, and listeners there rely on comunicados. These are paid messages, anything from birthday greetings to business transactions. It's radio at its most elemental. This is the magic of shortwave radio. Straining to hear through the static, listening to the sounds of people going about their lives, the world still feels big and far away. For On the Media, I'm David Gorin in Brooklyn, New York.
You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London and online at classicalwscs.org. Thank you. Gabor Szabo from his album Gypsy 66. We heard the title track Gypsy 66. And yesterday, some amazing, amazing musicians. That's Gabor Szabo on guitar, Barry Galbraith, Sam Brown on guitar, Sadeo Watanabe on flute, Gary McFarlane on maracas, Richard Davis, Al Stinson on bass, Grady Tate on drums, Willie Rodriguez and Francisco Pozo on percussion, and arrangements by Gary McFarland. That was released in 1965. Gabor Szabo, one of my favorite guitarists of all time. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London. I am here with you every Saturday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. Coming up in a moment, I'm going to have a documentary from Lost and Found Sound about Liberace. But first...
And now, another film rental discovery. But first, Indie Film Minute is proud to support World Kidney Day. World Kidney Day takes place every year on the second Thursday of March, raising awareness of the importance of our kidneys to our overall health. More information is available at worldkidneyday.org. Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Sometimes a film comes along that offers a look into lives different from our own. A film that is so sensitive, so insightful, that it has the power to change us. And maybe, just maybe, society as a whole. Moonlight is such a film. The story of a young man as he grows from age 9 to adulthood, Moonlight turns every expectation on its head. Told in 3 segments, it allows us to experience the difficulty of growing up black and gay in a drug-saturated macho culture. In less skilled hands, this could be cliché, but here, the story is presented with beautiful nuance. The camera seems to caress its subjects, and the director brings us infinite, life-changing moments that would fly by with little import in less caring hands. When a moment is chosen, it is explored with intricate subtlety. The finding of a mentor who becomes a father figure, the discovery of one's difference, violation of one's most intimate trust, a mother's betrayal, a laceration within and without, and ultimately, finding acceptance. Moonlight is one of those touchstone films that will be talked about forever. It allows us to grow while entranced within an unknown world. Its heartbeat is palpable and becomes one with our own. Moonlight. Night in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Well, I like to mix it up here on the Radio Thrift Shop. Some of you may not know. True confessions time. Some of you may not know that I am a huge Liberace fan. And in fact, I like almost any musician who was similar to Liberace or who imitated Liberace. But even more so, I am a huge fan of steel drum bands. You name it, steel drum music. I absolutely love it. And that's an instrument that I would love to learn how to play at some point in the not-too-distant future. We even have steel drum bands here in New Hampshire. They're absolutely wonderful. Okay, without further ado, Lost and Found Sound, Liberace.
It's Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras, Carnival, as they celebrated in countries such as Brazil, El Salvador, and Trinidad. Today, Lost and Found Sound takes us to Trinidad for a story about the birth of the steel drum, or pan, a carnival tradition. The Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, unfold the tale of the legendary Pan Drum Orchestra and the flamboyant American piano virtuoso who championed them. Here's the story of Liberace and the Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band.
Expo 67 in Montreal. I was 14 and went there with my parents. One day, I was walking along between the Ontario Pavilion and the Iran Pavilion, and I heard this sound that was like a luminous cloud, metallic and rhythmic and lyrical, and I followed this sound through the pavilions until I got to this sort of balcony on one pavilion overlooking a body of water, because the whole fair was on islands in the St. Lawrence River. And across there on a big open deck, this band was playing, guys beating on cans, big like garbage cans. I'd never heard anything like it. Who could resist?
We played at the Trinidad and Tobago Pavilion 2 or 3 shows a day. 28 guys in a group. And we played all kind of music, from classics to calypso to polka, jazz, you know, some of everything. And while we were performing, the Liberace saw the band.
The Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band. At that year, we were the best steel band in Trinidad and Tobago.
Thank you very, very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm anxious to have you meet a very exciting musical organization that I discovered at the Expo in Montreal, Canada. They're making their first national television appearance tonight on the Ed Sullivan program. This is Hugh Bordy, their musical director, the exciting Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band.
We was always shining. Before we met Liberace, we were shining. We were always a very colorful band dressed in lamé. This is Tripoli Pinehead. When we left and went away, this is where we left from. And I'd like, now in Tripoli Pinehead, we have over 180 players there waiting. The yard packed with people, outside packed with cars. And then we started practice. And the practice is going to go till 5 o'clock in the morning. It was so serious, it was like war. It was close to war. The people who really started the steel drum in those days were the poor, underprivileged person. They were considered as hooligans. My uncle, as a matter of fact, stopped coming to our home here because we playing the steel drum. My mother, who was his only sister.
My father, Hugh Bord, leader and founder of the Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band. I'm Emile Bord. My dad came from an upper middle class family. His dad was a pharmacist. It was a disappointment when he turned to the steel drums. The family wondering why would he associate himself with what we called back then vagabonds. It was sort of like how Rasta music, reggae music, started in Jamaica with the lower class and worked its way up.
My name is Abby Ali Bokas. I am 65 years of age. I'm an original member of Tripoli Steel Band. In those days, you know, you couldn't go to high school and be in steel band at the same time. Who went to high school had to discontinue more or less associating with steel band. We had an English society, and anybody who was associated with steel band was stigmatized.
Beating pan or dancing in the street, it was a disgrace. Yeah. You see, the poorer class of people could not afford piano music and all this. So the boys just invented ordinary steel drums. But they were tuned, they played a note, do re mi fa sol la ti do. They played the music by ear. Sweet pan music.
Junior Pouchet, steel band leader and arranger. There's different opinions on exactly which particular day at what time the steel band started. You know, you have several claims. The forerunner of the steel band, there was a certain thing called the Tambu Bamboo Band, which existed in the 20s and 30s in Trinidad. Made of different lengths of bamboo shoots and bamboo gourds that were very rhythmic, and carnival days, this is what the local people danced to.
My name is Ellie Manette. People call me the Stradivarius steel drum. I started playing trash cans around 11 years old in 1937, 38, throw the garbage out and beat on the bottom. The steel drum was born in a very humble way, from African skin drum to the tambu, to the garbage can, to the paint containers, into what we have today.
Welcome back with Liberace. What a great discovery that group are, aren't they?
Yes, this is the Trinidad Steel Band. They've been with me about a year and a half. The music of the steel band has only been around since after World War II, when the island of Trinidad was practically swamped with empty oil drums, such as you see here.
Due to the fact that the steel drum had such a bad reputation, in the early 40s and 50s, we could not get drums to buy. Because the Shell Oil Company and the British Petroleum, nobody wanted to sell you a drum. But the Navy, using a lot of oil, thousands of drums, piled up on the back of the warehouse a mile high. When the guards are all gone, we will go down there as young boys and steal the drums away from the Navy base and run away with them and try to build them for carnival.
When Roosevelt came to the land of the hummingbird, shouts of welcome were heard. When Roosevelt came to the land of the hummingbird, shouts of welcome were heard. His visit to the island is bound to be an epoch in local history, definitely marking a new era between Trinidad and America.
Calypso and steel band, it always go hand in hand, because when the steel band first started, all they used to play was calypso music. In those days, all the names of the bands came from movie war pictures like Casablanca, To Hell and Back, Desperados, Destination Tokyo. All these names from the old-time movie war pictures. And Tripoli came from the movie with John Payne and Maureen O'Hara, The Shores of Tripoli.
If you played in Renegades and I played in Tripoli, and one of us had to cross an intersection, it would be riots. We had riots among the bands.
My name is Michael Kernahan. I started playing band with the Tripoli in 1963. The Tripoli band really came to prominence with our arranger, Junior Pushet, for his arrangements for Gershwin's The Man I Love. We went to the Independence Festival competition. After the impact we made, Esso approached the band and sponsored the band, you know, and uniforms, and it was no looking back after that.
My name is Shannon Dudley, and I'm a professor of ethnomusicology at the University of Washington.
Sponsorship of steel bands was a really important development around the time of independence in 1962. When Eric Williams became the prime minister, he really put the screws, especially on a lot of international companies, to sponsor steel bands. And because, of course, the oil companies were all foreign corporations, they really wanted to get in good with the new government. If Eric Williams promotes the steel band as a symbol of Trinidad's new independent culture, many oil companies were eager to get on board with that and to associate themselves with that symbol.
Hugh Boyd, band leader for the Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band. Our sponsors, Esso Standard Oil, they brought us to the pavilion in Expo 67. We really had a wide repertoire and play music that could be reached by the outside world. When we play in places like Colorado and Kansas, people always say, are you going to play Rondo Capriccioso? Or are you going to play Paganini? Or are you going to play Handel Messiah?
Audience at the Liberace show, 99% white people. You know, the response was great. I remember we playing for like a black audience, and you know, and I don't know, they didn't appreciate what we were doing. We were playing a lot of classical music, and they wanted us to play something by James Brown, and, you know.
This is John Squaggett from the John Squaggett's Nugget Hotel Casino in Sparks, Nevada. We never questioned any sporting act Liberace brought in. It'd be the greatest surprise of the year. Our early showroom was, we called it the circus room at that time, because we had two elephants on stage. Bertha and Angel. But here's Liberace, and with his, you know, how he had that full-length mink coat. He'd come in on Bertha, and more jewelry. He had so many rings he could hardly hold up his hand. And he had the little angels of Korea, and they were on cycles. But I think one of the outstanding groups was the Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band. All these natives from Trinidad came in and playing music from Fitfog Allen oil drum. a lot of puff sleeves, a lot of calypso clothes, you know, like from Trinidad. To see that many people from Trinidad up in Sparks, Nevada was, because we do not have a very many people that color of that skin in this area. People just were just overwhelmed by their music.
We were touring as 27 black people with the Liberace Show, all in Birmingham, in the South. In those days, Governor Wallace was going up for election, and Lee took a chance.
Liberace!
The only thing I was curious about is where they got the idea for their costumes.
It's clear you have a great influence on people.
See, Liberace.
Liberace never did get a chance to come to Trinidad. We broke a lot of barriers with Liberace because of the music. As music, we all know, is one of the wonders of the world and could go through any barrier.
Hi, I'm Jack R. Johnson, and this is Hidden Histories. In his Native American tongue, his name literally means his horse is crazy. But at birth, he was known as Curly because of his light golden hair that curled. During his first vision quest, Curly had a vivid dream of a rider in a storm on horseback. People clutched at the rider but could not hold him. A red-backed hawk flew over the rider's head. When Curly reported the dream to his father and the medicine man was consulted, the latter interpreted it as a sign of his son's future greatness in battle. The young man would become the famous Native American warrior, Crazy Horse. During this time, Americans continually broke treaty agreements. The settlers advanced farther westward, resulting in violence and acts of destruction by both sides. When gold was discovered in the Black Hills of South Dakota, the pressure on the Lakota tribe living there became that much greater. In order to take possession of the region, the United States government decided to round up all remaining Free Plains Indians, primarily the Lakota or Sioux Indian tribe and the Cheyenne. President Grant set a deadline of January 31, 1876 for all Lakota and Northern Cheyenne Indians to report to their designated reservations, sometimes called agencies, or they would be considered hostile. In many instances, these so-called reservations were not much better than a concentration camp. By the 1860s, reservation life meant total dependency on the government. President Grant wanted the Indians to learn to live like white people and to abandon their tribal ways. But the Lakota camp refused to be housed on any reservation. Tune in for our next Hidden History when young Crazy Horse deals a devastating blow to Custer's attempt to round up the Indians at the Battle of Little Bighorn, better known as Custer's Last Stand. You can read more Hidden Histories at ahiddenhistory.blogspot.com. This is Jack R. Johnson for Hidden Histories.
All right, this is DJ Frederick. You've been listening to the Radio Thrift Shop. Here every Saturday evening on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London. I'm celebrating 18 years on the airwaves here. Wow, has it been that long? I want to say thank you for coming on this musical journey. I'll be back next week with more high weirdness. Remember, keep your radio free. Keep your mind free. Keep your spirit free.